Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's got to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of the next half hour of those of Sharon, Hughes, and of Dottie. And we're going to be talking about a product that Sharon has developed called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Dr. Stan, yes.
Good to have you with us. And let's see if we can get Dottie on the line here.
Okay.
Dottie, are you there?
Good evening.
Oh, good evening. Well, Sharon, I'm going to let you start out just talking about Heart and Body Extract and why you think it's important for people today.
Well, Heart and Body Extract, why is it important today? Well, I think it's very important today because a lot of people are really suffering with a number of different health issues. People just aren't getting enough good food to eat, even though they may think that they're eating well. They're not getting the necessary nutrition in the food to be able to give the body what it needs to heal itself properly. And so that's kind of where Heart and Body Extract comes to mind, is to help people have the tools to be able to assist the body to heal itself naturally and effectively. And the reason why Heart and Body Extract is in existence is back 8 years ago now, I had some pretty serious health problems. And again, I thought I was eating well. I thought I was eating lots of fresh fruits and vegetables. And I was exercising, walking and swimming and doing what I thought was healthy living. But at the same time as I thought I was living in a healthy way, my body wasn't getting enough nutrition. And what happened to me was at 45 going on 46, I developed very high blood pressure, 160 over 110. And when you have high blood pressure like that, at least for me, what happened to me was I would have dizzy spells, and I also had bleeding noses, and at the same time, and also headaches. I remember those nasty headaches, having those. At the same time as having the high blood pressure, I also had irregular heartbeat episodes whereby my heart would race and then it would seemingly skip beats and it was palpitating and I would have dizzy spells. And at the same time as that, I also had congestive heart failure problems with an enlarged heart, shortness of breath, lethargy, water retention in the ankles and in the feet, being very, very tired, having to have a nap at 3 o'clock every afternoon just basically to get through the day. So I had searched and searched and searched for something natural to help myself, and believe me, I have tried many different things, and I couldn't find anything that would help myself. And I was worried because I thought, well, gee, I'm 45 and I'm going downhill quick.
Yeah, if you have congestive heart failure at 45, you're in real trouble. And you say, if you have an enlarged heart and swelling the ankles, why, you're having real heart disease.
I was having real heart disease, and the astounding thing to me was I thought I was eating well. I really did. I mean, I was eating vegetables and fruits and having a little bit of chicken and turkey and avoiding the beef and doing everything I thought that was okay, that was good for you. And I guess it was, but it still wasn't enough. So that's where the Heart and Body Extract came in to the picture in my frustration. And after not being able to find anything that I tried to be effective, I then hired an astroherbologist that I know makes very excellent formulas, creates very excellent formulas, and together we collaborated and created the Heart and Body Extract.
Okay, you hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment or two. All right, Sharon, you're right ahead.
Yeah, so what happened was we did create the formula, and when we collaborated with the herbs, talking to each other, Greg and I was very cognizant of thinking that it's very important to have a product that would be safe for any folks that happen to be on any medications so that there be no negative side effects. I also asked Greg to make sure that it was very effective. I really didn't care about the taste. Taste to me wasn't important. It was very important to me to get results. And so, you know, together we decided on herbs that would be suitable in terms of being safe, effective, and that's the number one and two thing, safe and effective. So indeed he did deliver, and what we did was we created a formula which has in it garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, butcher's broom, bilberry, kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. And it tastes great to me. I think it tastes great. Many of our clients like the taste. A little bit warm. If a person finds it a little bit warm, add a little wee bit of juice, and it's perfectly fine. So what happened to me was within 2 weeks of using the Heart and Body Extract, my blood pressure went from 160 over 110 to 120 over 70. And I kept taking the blood pressure over and over at that time because I couldn't believe my sight. I thought, 120 over 70, how can that be? You know, is that right? 120 over 70. And I kept taking it, and my husband said, that's what it is, Sharon. It is 120 over 70. So I was just thrilled that my blood pressure was bouncing. And that happened to me in a couple of weeks. And as far as the irregular heartbeat episodes, that was improved within about 5 days. And as far as the congestive heart failure problems of the edema around the ankles and the feet and not being able to wear your own shoes and being so tired and shortness of breath, I was much, much improved within 30 days. So big, big improvement. It didn't take very long. Everybody's different. Some people are going to take longer. Other people are going to be shorter. But we're all unique, and faithful usage is key, 15 drops 3 times a day. And if a person's faithful to the heart and body, it will be faithful back.
All right, fine. Well, you know, you get the use of the taste very, very quickly, and to sort of look forward to it every morning when we get up and get started first thing. Well, I guess it's Sharon Harris. We're talking about heart and body extract, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sharon was just telling how after she got started putting this heart and body extract, it's got hawthorn leaves and hawthorn berries, and hawthorn, at least from a herbologist's point of view, is always good for the heart. It's got garlic. It's got all sorts of things in it. I won't go over all the various things that are in it, but it certainly seems to have done a great job for Sharon, in a relatively short period of time. She really felt that she was ever so much better. And so where did you get the idea of actually going ahead and marketing the heart and body extract?
Well, that's a good question. Like, I do like to be independent, have my own business. I'm a nurse by profession. Always like to help people. But I had come from a background of doing another, actually, heart formula, and I had kind of questionable results with that formula. I'm not going to say the name because that's not very nice to do that, especially on the radio. So I had to be sure with the heart and body extract that I was representing something that was safe and representing something that was effective before I put my time, my effort, my finances, my reputation, integrity, my energy into something. So the first year of being with the Heart and Body Extract, I was very kind of like careful, and we kind of quietly helped maybe about 100 people in the first year. You know, very moderate, slow, like turtle kind of rate of assisting people to try out the product. And then I saw person after person after person after person getting results. And then my faith was getting up and my belief was getting up and my confidence was getting up. It's not just me that got results. I'm seeing it happen over and over and over and over and over and over again. So after a year of just kind of slowly testing the waters at that point, after a year, so that's like 7 years ago now, started to run some magazine ads, and then I guess about a year after that we started doing some radio ads, and it's been a really joyous journey. I mean, now I think about just how busy we're really getting. I mean, well, we got tons of calls coming in and tons of emails and thousands of customers all over the world, and it's been really a very joyous thing to see the wonderful results that are happening for people.
Well, now you mentioned on our conversations that you actually have a naturopath who's doing a study on this. Will he tell you what sort of results he's getting? Because he's doing, is he doing a double-blind study, or how is he actually running that study?
Yeah, that's a really good question. As part of the thing with the heart and body extract, a lot of people, you know, had questioned in the early years, especially, well, what kind of proof do you have that this works? What kind of validation do you have? What kind of clinical studies do you have? And I kind of really listened to that, and I thought, well, I know that the formula is wonderful, and many of my clients do, but let's have some doctors actually validate what we already know, that it's safe and it's effective. So over a year ago, gosh, it's been like a year and a half ago, we did start a clinical study in Vancouver, British Columbia. And with that clinical study, we're studying the benefits of heart and body extract, or the results of heart and body extract for blood pressure. That's the study, studying blood pressure. Because there's a distinctive taste with the heart and body, it would be very hard to be doing a double-blind kind of study, because it would be very obvious which one is the active formula and which one would be the placebo. So it's basically an open-ended type of study whereby each and every participant would actually get the heart and body extract, and then the doctors monitored the blood pressure levels over 3 months' time. The clients would come in for three visits, an initial visit whereby they would fill out an intake form with all sorts of questions about the background health, and then the doctor would take the blood pressure, and then the doctor would give a bottle of product. And then 6 weeks later, the person would come in again for their second visit. The blood pressure would be taken at that time, and then they'd be given a second bottle, and then after that, a couple bottles, depending on when they can come back, and then there would be the third visit. So it would be for 3 months, the study. And then the doctors would monitor the blood pressure levels and see the differences. They also noted, you know, quite a bit of clinical evidence in terms of the benefits of the formula in terms of other type of challenges that people would have. And so in the final write-up that the doctors are working on, they're going to include some of the clinical studies of the individual clients that were pretty dramatic in terms of their results. So that'll be part of the write-up. Summertime being very busy, Dr. Benz is going to be marrying Dr. Vicky. They're getting kind of in the marriage kind of thing right now, which is, of course, very important to them. Like, they're young doctors getting married, so I still haven't got the final results yet. However, I have seen preliminary papers without the clinical studies of some of the individuals, and the results are very impressive in terms of the diastolic and the systolic levels of the blood pressure going down very significantly.
Well, here you have something you can actually monitor rather than just how the patients feel. So here's an objective
right.
Look at it. Well, Dottie's on the line there. Dottie, how did you get involved with heart and body extract? And have you been taking it for some time?
Well, yes, Dr. Stan, I have. For 5 years now, I've been taking it, and the reason that I really started, I heard Sharon use the word nutrition, and that's always a key word with me, But the reason I was really looking for something that would enhance my health is that I ended up 9 years ago with a laundry list of conditions that needed to be improved. They had to stop my heart and start it again. I had neuropathy, high blood pressure, and ended up with diabetes 2 as well. And I had tinnitus and water retention. And so I had a long list of things that needed attention, and there I thought I was healthy. And in 4 years after that scenario, I also lost my central vision due to a traumatic experience with the capillaries in front of my retinas hemorrhaging. And so that hampered my life, turned it upside down. And there was no answer for that one. So, yes, I was looking for something that my body was not getting. So nutrition was that word when I heard Sharon and the host of the show expressing what it had done for him, what was in it, and so forth. Called and got the product immediately. And so July the 17th of 04 is when I started taking Heart and Body Extract. I first put it in some cranberry juice because I was having the kidneys to not function up to the normalcy. So I was using that, and then I thought, no, I better use the instructions. So that was the 15 drops 3 and 4 times a day under the tongue. And when I started doing that, I got immediate relief from my neuropathy. My feet began to improve. And if anyone knows, you know, how badly that hurts, you just wish you could chop your feet off. They burn, ache, just throb so badly that you just want to get rid of it any way you can.
Did it really help?
It was great.
Did it really help you then?
Oh, yes, tremendously. Within 24 hours, I was sleeping more. More than 20 minutes, it was an hour at least. Then that I noticed that immediate relief. Plus, I was going to the bathroom more and releasing all the water weight. So that was the improvement there. That was in my ankles and legs. And then I did have around my ears, the earpieces on my glasses were, you know, into the side of my head. And I noticed that was going down just a little bit within a period of about 2 weeks. But the real important thing here is that, and I was not searching for an improvement in my vision. I really never thought of it, honestly. I just wanted to feel better and get healthier. But Heart and Body went directly to the other end of my body and started cleaning up that dead blood in front of my retinas. And so instead of two black blobs, now this was in the first, seventh, and eighth, ninth days that I noticed this improvement. That's, you know, that's immediate, folks. Within 2 weeks, that's great. It went from the two black blobs to a gray film, lacy, smoky-like, which it is now. It's not totally cured. But I have my equilibrium back, and I can see through. And when I read the title of that magazine that I had not seen, put it up, you know, about 5 inches from my face so that my periphery could help also. And I could read right straight through and see the title, and my eyes fell down on the next two lines, and I could read that.
Well,
our
telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you're out there and you have a question for Sharon, she's the expert on this, or for Dottie for that matter. And we'll be back here in just a moment, about the half hour, while we'll go to an open line for the second half hour. But right now, if you'd like to talk to either Sharon or Dottie, the number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Sharon certainly supports Radio Liberty. We appreciate your help. It keeps us on the air and pays for the shortwave and a lot of the other things that we do to try to bring people information that you're not going to get elsewhere. Well, Sharon, you go right ahead. Certainly, we've talked about the study, and you actually, of course, I...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
To feel somewhat better. He's only on the first bottle. And what was the point you wanted to make, Paul?
What I wanted to make was that the thing that concerned me and does is that my heart rate, instead of being like 70 beats per minute, is like 35.
Well, that is an awfully slow heartbeat.
It sure is.
And that you really probably ought to see a doctor, because when you start getting down below 40, it means you may have an AV block, and it probably has nothing to do with the product, but you ought to see a physician there and make sure, because if your heartbeat's at 35, you may very well need a pacemaker.
Well, I've heard that, but I'm leaving this up to Dad.
All I can say is that you just don't want to have that too slow for too long.
Yeah.
Okay?
But I do know that the Hearts and Body is very helpful for regulating heart rate and heartbeat. So if you have had this slow heart rate for quite some time, Is it just has it been happening for a long time that you've had this low heart rate, or
just since I started passing out?
Okay, yeah.
That may be why you're passing out.
That can improve. It can improve, but the thing is, you know, Dr. Stan, of course, is right. Safety is very critical for you. But I do know, and I've seen this happen before with the bradycardia, if you give the heart and body enough time, it can get up to higher numbers to where it should be, like 65, 70, et cetera. But you need to have a couple of months, at least a month of taking it to get to that far.
I will do it. You've convinced me, so I'm going to do it. I did want to ask one more question.
Sure.
I'm putting away things for what's coming.
Okay.
Can I put this away?
In other words, can he store it away someplace, and how long will it be? Will the ingredients be active?
Yeah.
You know, I've had this concern with the New World Order, and I've had people buy years and 2 years supplies because they're concerned that they won't be able to get it in the future. You know what? The expiration date, by law, we can't have it more than 10 years. I think it's 10 years right now. But it actually will last a long time, like 30, 40, 50 years. So no worries. Just keep it at room temperature, and you're good to go. Don't refrigerate it, please. It doesn't work as well. We like it at room temperature because your body is at room temperature, and it's more soothing for your body. So
don't put it in the room somewhere?
You can. It's not sensitive to heat. I mean, if it gets hot, there's no problem with it. But it's better not to put it in the refrigerator. But it's good for years and years and years.
A root cellar, though, is not too cold. It's just sort of...
No, it's not
well, you're down in Arizona. You probably want to get something.
Yeah, you too. I like to visit the root cellar.
Okay, fine. Well, then you go down there to take your heart and body extract.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. That's not it's like good. A refrigerator. Not.
Do I get a discount with...
No, you don't. Okay.
Okay.
Anything else, Paul, before we let you go?
Thanks a lot.
God bless.
That's great.
Okay, fine. Well, keep us posted and let us know how you do, will you?
Right. God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. That was Paul calling from Arizona. And if there's anybody out there, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And our guest is Sharon. And, of course, we've got Dottie. Dottie, is there anything else you'd like to say? We're just about out of time here.
Well, I just want to remind people that within our food, we have stripped ourselves of the natural nutrition that is there. So we need to stay away from the processed foods, and you need to take the heart and body extract to give the body exactly what it does need. It's balanced, and it's not patchwork or any guesswork whatsoever about it. And it's the good stuff in the bottle.
All right, fine.
Yes, indeed, and I think we should give the contact information.
Oh, please do. Here, I got so involved talking to you, I forgot.
Okay.
You go ahead and get the contact information out, please.
I hope Paul gets back to us, too. I'm very concerned about his bradycardia. But anyway, the number to call is 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305. And you can have a look at our website. It's an excellent website, www.heartandbody.com, heartandbody.com.
All right, fine. So I certainly go there and look at the website and try it. I've been taking it for some time here, and I take it every morning first time I get up. But I think it's an important thing. You need all the health and you can get. We're constantly under attack today. There are all sorts of things in our food. The aspartame that they're putting in our food, the MSG they're putting in our food, the genetically altered food, certainly the pesticides, these all are having an impact on our body. Sharon, thank you so very much for being with us. And Dottie, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
God bless. And our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, right here at Radio Liberty. this is Dr. Stan here, and I never get tired of hearing Kate Smith sing God Bless America. I hope you enjoy that song as much as I do. The reason we put it on here is because we need to be constantly aware and reminded of the fact that our freedoms come from God, not from government, different than any other nation in the world today. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and shorts, we have another hour here, of another half hour before we get to the next program. But so this is going to be open lines. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or a comment. But you know, the latest report is out that one house in every eight in the United States either in foreclosure. This is one of every homes with a mortgage on it is either in foreclosure or is certainly behind in his payments and may well soon be in foreclosure. And the incidence of foreclosures is rising now. Of course, we hear, oh my goodness, sales of homes are up and the prices are up a little bit. That's because they're selling foreclosed homes. And of course, there are a lot of people out there who really don't understand what's going on. They don't understand we're in the eye of the hurricane where things seem to quiet down and it's almost as if the storm has passed. But believe me, the worst part of the storm lies ahead. In fact, if you read other reports we're reading, they say that certainly they're going to continue losing homes until the end of 2010. I think it's probably going to be closer to the end of 2012 because people are going to continue losing their jobs. And then, of course, they lose their jobs and they can't make the payments on the home. And they lose their homes. And that is exactly what is planned. You have to go back and read my May and June 2009 Radio Liberty letters. That's May and June 2009 Radio Liberty letter, and you'll find it at www.radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and there you can actually read Andrew Jackson's farewell address, and he talked about what the banks were doing in the United States at that time. And it was a coordinated effort to bring about this sense of gloom and foreboding that permeated the entire nation at that time, and it was all done by the banks. It was done intentionally, and that's, of course, the reason that they so attack Andrew Jackson, and certainly why, if you were to go up onto the Internet, go to Google, and simply put in Andrew Jackson farewell address, and you go to the lead page there that it comes up, and the article at the top of the page is Andrew Jackson's farewell address. Only it's an abridged edition. And all mention of Andrew Jackson's battle with the bank is simply deleted. Why is that at the top of the page where most people would certainly be reading it? Why, very simply, because they don't want you to know that what you're seeing today is deja vu all over again. The same forces are at work here almost 200 years later, 170 years later, 180 years later, that were at work when Andrew Jackson was the President of the United States. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. We have a book that was written in 1899 by Mr. Walth, who was a lawyer. The book is called The Coming Battle, and it talks about how the banking system is eventually going to take over control of the property of the American people, and it's going to take over control of the government. This is 1899, the book, The Coming Battle. It's been reprinted by a friend Paul Walters, and it's a very apropos for today, because of course Mr. Walter didn't understand the Brotherhood of Darkness or the secret societies. He didn't understand how the major banks at that time were working in concert to take control of our government, because they were tied into the occult, and the whole idea was eventually they were going to take over our government, and then they were going to use the military and financial power of the United States to take over control of the world. And as you've heard me say so many times, but you'll hear me say it again, that's why we have bases in 131 nations, where we have almost 750 bases throughout the world. Who are we defending ourselves from? Why do we have the biggest military in the world? We spend more money on our military than all the rest of the countries in the world put together. Who are we defending against now? Why, it can't be the Chinese Communists, because we're doing everything we can to build up the Chinese Communists. It can't be the terrorists, the Al-Qaeda terrorists, because we're funding the Pakistani ISI intelligence agency that is funding the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda who are killing our boys over in Afghanistan. It can't be the Russians, because we're doing everything we can to fund the Russians. In fact, it was American companies and money from various agencies, the IMF and the Export-Import Bank and the Asian Development Bank, that drilled all the oil wells and drilled all the gas wells over there in Russia, and suddenly made Russia the second largest exporter of oil and the largest exporter of natural gas in the entire world, and made Europe totally dependent upon the Soviet Union. And believe me, the Soviet Union is still communist. After all, Putin, who's the dictator there, and he really is the dictator, he's behind the scenes. They try to give this facade of democracy, but Putin came from the KGB, just as Gorbachev came from the KGB. And of course, Gorbachev's a very good friend of George Bush and George Shultz and all of these people. In fact, when Gorbachev put on his State of the World meeting, and I think it was in the year 2000, all the leaders of our nation were there to honor that great patriot. Why? Because Gorbachev is deeply involved in the occult, as all these other people are. And if you want to know about Gorbachev and the occult, there's a wonderful book. It was written by a man who's deeply involved in the occult. His name is Wayne Peterson, and Wayne lives over in Henderson, Nevada, where people from all over the world have come, and they're waiting for the appearance of the Christ, not Jesus Christ, but the Christ, the New World Leader. But Wayne Peterson's book, Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary People, is available from Radio Liberty, where he talks about David Rockefeller recruiting him into this movement, Mikhail Gorbachev, and his allegiance to the occult. Fascinating book written from the other point of view, with a man who has seen Maitreya materialize and then dematerialize. Well, let's go to Ruby, who's calling from Live Oak. Hi, Ruby. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
I have an interesting thing. I was noticing just casually the ingredients of a hand lotion that I've used for a while. And it's supposed to be really, really good. It's made by Avon. And for all the world, it just seems so strange to me that it has squalene in it. Now, why would it have squalene in it?
Well, squalene comes from fish oil. Basically, there's nothing wrong with the external use of squalene. In fact, you have squalene in your tissues, in your body. The problem is that when you inject squalene as an adjuvant with other things that are intent upon stimulating the immune system, what you do then is you begin to build antibodies to squalene that then begin to attack the squalene in your body and trigger an autoimmune disease. So there's nothing wrong with squalene on the skin.
But okay. Do
not, under any circumstances, take the influenza vaccine, because it contains both mercury, a toxic dose of mercury, but even more frightening, it contains squalene, which has never been licensed in the United States because of the disastrous effects it's had. Every time it's been used, it's used in Europe, but it's not used in the United States. But under the emergency status that we have with a pandemic that threatens to kill millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of people, and of course, it's all a lie. But of course, it could kill them if it should mutate, and if it mutated, then it could kill millions and millions and hundreds of millions of people. But the trouble is that if it mutates, then the vaccine they're creating won't do any good against it. So, why are they trying to get everybody to take the vaccine? Why are they trying to scare everybody to death? Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just because the vaccine companies are going to make about $50 billion out of this. Or maybe it has to do with the population agenda, because there really are people who want to destroy the lives of millions of our people. They've destroyed the lives of so many of our children. One out of every six American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality or a learning disability. You don't see this in the Amish children. One out of every nine children has asthma. You don't see this in the Amish children who don't take the vaccines. One out of every 60 to 90 children is autistic boys. We've destroyed their lives, but you don't see it in the Amish children that don't take the vaccines. And, of course, we've destroyed the lives of so many people, and they're not concerned about it. And they allowed a city of malaria to continue in Africa, where it kills over 2,500 people a day. We've allowed AIDS to persist. It kills over 5,000 people a day, and both of them are preventable diseases. They could be controlled, malaria with DDT, and AIDS, certainly with the use of standard and effective public health measures. And the treatments out there that really do work, that are not allowed. And, of course, we know why they wanted to actually do away with DDT, because Alexander King, who is the vice chair of the Club of Rome, which is the European counterpart of the Council on Foreign Relations, Alexander King wrote in his book that when they were using DDT, and they used it in Ghana, it saved so many lives that we had to outlaw DDT. Alexander King, one of the elitists who really believes in population control, actually had the audacity, the effrontery to write that in a book that he wrote. That the problem with DDT isn't that it didn't work. It worked too well. It saved too many human lives. So that's why we've outlawed DDT. And, of course, we know that why they're allowing AIDS to continue to spread, because we've read Bertrand Russell's book, The Impact of Science on Society. We're on pages 103 and 104. He talks about how suddenly the population is increasing and abortion isn't going to solve the problem, and you can't kill off enough people with war. So what we need is a black plague to sweep the world every generation, and then we can procreate as much as we want to, and the world won't be too full. That was Bertrand Russell, the great humanitarian. They are using AIDS and DDT for population control. Is this what the new vaccine's all about? I don't know, but I certainly don't trust the fact that we have people who believe in euthanasia working at the highest levels of our government, and they've already killed hundreds of millions of people.
Yeah, another thing, Dr. Stan, the Amish people don't eat all this refined foods either. They don't go to the grocery store and get all the junk off the shelves that we do.
You're absolutely right.
Another thing I'd just like to ask really right quick, or not ask, but just to comment on, I heard on Wednesday or Thursday a lady was mentioning her displeasure at the guest you had on, Chris Wynn, who has a website of yadayahweh.com.
That's Craig Wynn. But
Craig
Wynn,
right.
Did you go to his website?
No, I didn't. But I was also really rather disturbed by a couple of the things that he said. They said something about in their scriptures there was nothing about a cross, and I find that unbelievable. And he said also that God didn't want to be praised, and I also find that unbelievable. So my comment is, I just find it hard to believe that. I mean, he may be incredibly intelligent and capable and very learned man, but is he an inspired writer? That's what I find difficult.
I don't know, Ruby, and I probably am not going to have Craig on again. But I will tell you, I was unsettled when he said that the Holy Spirit, if you go to the original
mm-hmm.
Hebrew and Greek,
mm-hmm.
has a feminine gender. Well,
mm-hmm.
I never heard that before. So
never.
I called a friend of mine who's a minister up in Oregon. It has a wonderful ministry up there, loves the Lord. And, of course, he's taken his degrees, and he can read in Greek and in Hebrew. I called him just this afternoon, and I said, hey, what's this about in the original Hebrew, that the Holy Spirit has a feminine nature? And he said, well, all words or all things in Hebrew have a gender, either male or female. He looked it up, he called me back, and the Holy Spirit is a female gender. What is its significance? I don't know. I mean, I think that it's a very interesting thing, and I think people who are interested ought to go to Craig's website, but certainly his things that he said, they may very well be true. I can't read Greek and Hebrew, but I do know that there have been a lot of things that have been added onto Christianity down through the centuries because there have been people there who had an agenda. And I just wish I could read the Greek and Hebrew, but that's not my calling. My calling is to bring you provocative things. But I appreciate your remarks, and I was rather shocked when he said that it was not a cross; it was a pole. But
pole, right.
All right. Anyway, but anything else you wanted to say, Ruby?
No, that's all. I got to get off now too. Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much. God
bless
you, Dr.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question or a comment here, well, we'd love to hear from you. But certainly, we are in real trouble as a nation. Certainly, as I was commenting earlier, one out of every eight homes with a mortgage on it—that is approximately the latest figures are 13.2%. Of homes with mortgages are either behind on their payments or, frankly, in one or another stages of foreclosures. And the foreclosures are going to continue well into 2010, and some people say they're going to go up to 2012, as long as we continue losing jobs. And you must understand that they could have stopped this whole thing 11 months ago when Henry Paulson demanded the $700 billion, and he could have started buying up these CDOs and stabilized that was the collateralized debt obligations, these fraudulent loans that they made, these fraudulent bonds that they made, where they bundled the fraudulent loans together and then sold them as AAA-rated with debentures on them or derivatives on them that guaranteed their value. And they've never gone after. They've never, of course, sued the companies that put out these fraudulent bonds, which makes you realize that they're all in on this together. The smaller banks don't have the money, and the larger banks, both domestic and foreign, are all associated with the Brotherhood of Darkness. And part of this fraud, and what's the purpose, is to bring down the whole world financial system. They tell you that they're trying to preserve homes and keep people in their homes, and yet the first program they came up with, Hope for Homeowners, why, of course, it actually helped one homeowner. It was supposed to help 400,000. The latest program was supposed to help everybody, and only about 9% of the people have had their mortgages certainly gone over and redone. And, well, how could you come up with a program that bad? You're spending something like $14 trillion. Why can't you keep the people in their homes? We can go ahead and give people $8,000 tax credit to buy a new house and $4,500 for cash for clunkers. Why aren't you trying to keep people in their homes and write legislation that will help these people? And the truth of the matter is, they don't want to keep them in their homes. They want this whole financial system to collapse, but they certainly can't tell the people that any more than they can tell them that they intentionally transferring our jobs, our factories, and our wealth overseas. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we talk about bad things. A lot of people say, oh, all you do is talk about.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us,
We'll pass. That's life unserved will certainly pass. It's only what's done for Christ will last. Life on here on earth will certainly pass. It's only what's done for Christ will last. I believe that, and hopefully we're going to have at least some impact on some people's lives. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that we are having an all-day seminar on the 25th of October, and if you haven't made your reservation, we hope that you will. We're bringing in Catherine Albrecht, William Grigg, Ashley Mote, Tom Horn. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers. It's an all-day conference. We're going to be serving lunch, so you're going to have a reservation. If you're coming from elsewhere and you want to get information on where to stay, certainly we've reserved a block of rooms at the Seascape. Cliff Golf Course, at the Sea Cliff Inn, So if you would like to get more information on that, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's going to be at the Seascape Golf Course. It's at the Sea Cliff Inn. And, of course, we have a block of rooms there, but you're going to have to get them at least a month ahead of time, or, of course, they will not hold the rooms at a special price for you. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will want to get our material to understand the spiritual nature of what's going on. We have a great 10-DVD set. It's called The Final Countdown by Pastor Billy Crone. There's the part one and part two, each with 5 DVDs, and he does a good job of talking about what's going on, but he gives you the scriptures, and then he gives you video clips which really help to dramatize what is taking place. We put out an awful lot of the Final Countdown DVDs, and we've yet to get a complaint about it. And then, of course, we also carry his 10-DVD set on creation, and we're going to get Pastor Crone back here as soon as we can, and we'll go ahead and we'll look at right now we do have the 10-DVD set on creation, though, available. We have his DVD on his personal testimony and how he came to know the Lord. It's called Get a Life. It's really a very, very touching, presentation. I hope it will touch your life as it did mine. Then, of course, to understand the spiritual nature of the battle, you need to get the 4-CD set or 4-tape set on the supernatural, because there is a supernatural realm out there. That's what we cover in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. My talk on DVD on The Final Secret. My talk on financial Armageddon with the syllabus that comes with that. And these all point you to an understanding of the spiritual forces that work behind the scenes. We have a number of books written by Mandy P. Hall, who was a Satanist, who worshipped Lucifer, but we carry his books on a special catalog, a special list. We don't offer them publicly, but we do carry Wayne Peterson's book, Extraordinary Times, Extraordinary Peoples, and we have at least four books by Mandy P. Hall, the leading Satanist of the last century, and of course Franklin Delano Roosevelt was one of his disciples. And the books would be The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, where Sidney Mandy P. Hall talks about when the warrior on the block has finally got the full knowledge of his craft, then he'll have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. He'll have the seething energy of Lucifer in his hands, and he'll learn how to apply it. We carry his book on the Lectures in Ancient Philosophy, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, and probably the one that will help you to understand most what's going on in America, The Secret Destiny of America. The Secret Destiny of America will take you into the emblem on the back of the dollar bill in a book written in 1944 that tells you about the long-range plan to use America's wealth and power to bring about the world government. Our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, our webpage, radioliberty.com, where you can hear us on the Internet 9 hours a day. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, and we'll be back here in just a moment. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg, who has his own radio program. He used to be the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now he writes a blog, and he does his radio programs, and he writes books, and always a welcome addition to our program here at the end of the week. William, how are you tonight?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. Thank you again for having me as a guest.
Well, it's always good to have you. What would you like to talk about tonight?
You and I have spoken before about how the Obama administration in some ways seems to be like a Clintonian restoration, given that you have Obama and a handful of people from his Chicago political machine at the top. But if you go down just beneath that veneer, you have all these people who are veterans of the Clinton administration and the Democratic leadership of the Clinton era, and in a lot of ways seems as if somebody put our entire society into some kind of a time machine, or there's been some kind of a quantum singularity that sucked us all back to about 1993, 1994 or so, because a lot of the debates that are going on right now, a lot of the conflicts that are being orchestrated seem to have the same flavor as what we had the first couple of years of the Clinton administration just before the Oklahoma City bombing. And I can't help but think that that's a dynamic that's being re-engineered, because you have this big debate going on, and it's not so much a debate really as something akin to a professional wrestling match over the issue of what's called healthcare reform. And you're hearing pretty much the same suite of proposals from the administration and its supporters in Congress. And they all boil down to the idea that the government has to take over the financing of healthcare and the delivery of healthcare by way of the health insurance and health financing mechanisms in order to bring about a more equitable distribution of healthcare in our society. And we're hearing all kinds of horror stories about the admitted imperfections and occasional inadequacies of our system. But at the same time, we're being told that this is something that the government would run much better, and we have a partially socialized system already. The healthcare delivery mechanism, not to say that the practice of healthcare is such, but the delivery mechanism and the payment mechanism are all, of course, structured by government and operated in a way that ensures that you're going to have maximum expense and maximum difficulty for healthcare providers, and you're going to have maximum difficulty for people who, for whatever reason, don't have adequate coverage within this very confusing and almost impenetrable system.
Well, you know, it's the most amazing thing. I mean, President Obama says that he is going to be able to expand care and improve care and cut the expenses, you know. Well, how is he going to do that? Well, he doesn't really tell you how he's going to do that. We see a beautiful example of how the government works in the Cash for Clunkers bill.
Yeah.
Where, of course, many of the dealers who sold the cars in good faith and took in the clunkers and destroyed them. And now they don't have the car, and they don't have anything to resell in the way of a used car, and they can't get any money out of the government. Almost $2 billion owed to the dealers. Government's only put out $147 million, a very small fraction, less than 10% of what should be going to the dealers. Many of them are facing it. They can't borrow money. What are they going to do? I mean, certainly the General Motors apparently is giving them government money to tide them over, but we really want a government agency that can't even manage something simple like Cash for Clunkers to be in charge of maintaining our health care and determining who will live and who will die and what treatments are appropriate and how much money will be spent. And, you know, certainly when the government directs health care, an awful lot of people are going to die unnecessarily. You go right ahead.
Well, I don't want to give the wrong impression by the derisive chuckle that greeted your last comment about government arranging for a lot of people to die unnecessarily if we end up with an entirely socialized system here in the United States. That was a laugh of resigned terror. That wasn't a laugh of derision at the prospect of people dying. If you'll indulge me, Dr. Stan, I have to disclose something of a personal nature here. I was in the hospital this week for a couple of days. I came down with a very severe, aggressive gastrointestinal infection, blindsided me, knocked me off my feet. And while I was there, I spent a lot of time watching television. The only time I watch television, interestingly enough, is when I'm on the road and in hotels, or if I'm in the hospital, because we don't have television in our house. That's a lifestyle choice that we made. And so the only time that I'm exposed to the common fare that people consume via cable television is when I'm in those kinds of circumstances. Of course, everything that they discussed this week had to do with healthcare reform, as it's called. And one of the most insistent themes that we heard, or that I heard, rather, in all these discussions, and these discussions, by the way, were framed in such a way that you had an advocate of an outright socialized single-payer option on one hand, and on the other hand, you had somebody representing either the government-aligned pharmaceutical companies or the government-aligned, government-created, for that matter, insurance companies, saying that they agreed in principle with what the single-payer advocates were proposing, but they wanted to modify some of the details to make them more economically acceptable to their interests. But one of the most insistent themes in all these discussions was the idea that we have to do away with fee-for-service medicine. There are only a handful of people, actually there's a small but growing population, but it's a relative handful of people who are medical professionals, that is to say old-time general practitioners who practice fee-for-service medicine. We're blessed in the community in which I live to have a fee-for-service clinic not far from our house. It's only about 10 minutes away. We've availed ourselves of their services on many occasions. You pay for the medicine or the treatment that you need, and nothing more. You pay for it directly, and it's very inexpensive. Granted, it is being underwritten by a large Catholic hospital, but it's being underwritten for humanitarian reasons and charitable reasons by a private, no, quasi-private entity. I mean, there is no real private entity anymore in our healthcare system. But the point I'm making here is that they still practice fee-for-service medicine, and it's a wonderful service that they give. That's the sort of thing they want to do away with. They want to make it impossible for people to be in charge in any way, shape, or form of the payment, the financing, the distribution, the allocation of their own health care. They want this to be entirely socialized through a mechanism that, in terms of the way it operates, would be corporatist. You'd have government and corporations.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, William was saying that they really want to do away with fee-for-service medicine. They want everybody to be working through a corporate structure. And I will tell you that everything's being done today to force the surgeons and the doctors into corporate structure. I know of now, I'm out of medicine, but I know my friends who are still in this. And those people who were in private practice, they would do an operation, say a total hip, and they'd get $1,300 for it. When, of course, they join the local corporation, they get $1,200, but they don't have to pay for their staff, their malpractice insurance, their office, their telephone. Everything is taken care of. So obviously, the corporation is getting far higher fees than the private doctors. Why? Because they are manipulating the doctors and forcing them into the corporations so that they can be controlled. And people do not understand that 50 years ago, when I started practicing medicine, nobody in America went without health care. Every county in the United States had a county hospital or had to contract with an adjacent county where there could be health care provided for the poor and the indigent and those who couldn't afford to pay the full amount of money but could afford to pay some. And doctors were making a sufficient sum of money, and altruistic enough that the best doctors, the good doctors, the ones who really cared, went out and gave their time for absolutely nothing, 1 or 2 days a week. And I know very often, well, that I would often call these private doctors who weren't getting compensated. And when I was in my training, they'd come to the hospital to help me if there was a problem. And we had a wonderful system that worked very well. But, of course, the socialists, the Marxists, the fascists, the Kevorkian followers wanted to do away with that, and so they systematically closed down almost every county hospital in our nation. And then, of course, they're taking us step by step, you know, into socialized medicine, Medicare. They promised us by 1990, it was formed in 1965, by 1990, it was going to cost $9 billion, and we could afford that. But we could give the doctors regular and customary fee. Well, by 1990, it cost $90 billion. Sure. Today, it's pushing $400 billion. They actually are losing money every single year. But, of course, we have a Medicare trust fund, but the only trouble is, government officials stole all the money in the trust fund. They put in IOUs, and they tell you, there's a trust fund. Sure there is. But there are IOUs from a government that has to borrow money every single day just to stay in function, somewhere between $3 and $4 billion. We have to borrow. So what do you think those IOUs are really worth? And that's, of course, why the pressure is on to actually come in with socialized medicine, because the whole Medicare system is collapsing and draining off money. And so they've got the only way they can change things. And, of course, they say that we're not going to cut back on health care for the seniors. We're just going to cut $350 billion from that over the next 10 years. Yeah. And we've got to have socialized medicine, or we've got to have this new health care program so we can cut back on the government deficit. What sort of madness is that? Does anybody believe that Barack Obama, who promised to get our troops out of Iraq and then promised to get them out by 2010, and now has promised to get them out by 2011, do you honestly think Barack Obama is going to keep his word? Go right ahead.
It seems to me a rudimentary question if you pose it in the following terms. If you have the following options, which would you choose? Would you prefer a private hospital or just a hospital? Let's take the term private out of the equation for the moment here. Would you prefer to seek your medical treatment at a hospital that's run by, say, the Catholic Church, or a hospital that is run by the mafia. The mafia, of course, being an organization that steals from people, swindles from people, uses the practice and the threat of violence in order to obtain what it wants, you would not want to put yourself in the hands of a doctor who's working for an organized crime syndicate. Well, socialized medicine, government-run medicine, is essentially the same as the mafia model, with the big difference here that the mafia, as it's presently constituted, at least in this country, doesn't really inflict itself upon people that have not actively sought out their services. I mean, the mafia actually leaves you alone for the most part. It doesn't actually go out and force you to be part of whatever it is they're doing. The government, on the other hand, as this discussion of fee-for-service medicine illustrates, is entirely devoted to expanding the compass of its power until it includes everybody. And the fact that they want to do away with fee-for-service medicine is, if you will, the poker tell here that really tips off the true intentions. It has nothing to do with providing health care for people who are not able to pay for it. It has to do with the complete subsummation of the American population to the supervisory authority of a political elite that would be managing every aspect of their lives, including the most intimate decisions with respect to health care and the maintenance of our physical well-being. If you look at the drafts of the so-called health care reform bills that are in circulation right now, and I think that they're playing a shell game. I really think what's going to happen is that they're going to integrate part of I think, three or four different bills. There have been five, I think, that have been put into play, and three of them seem to be gathering the most attention. And they make sure that nobody knows exactly which of the specifics will end up in the final bill, and there are enough similarities among the three that they could end up with something that we can pretty much guess as to the contours of what they're talking about. But one of the things I find really interesting is this provision in the main health care bill that would make the IRS one of the major enforcement agencies of the so-called health care reform initiative, for the purpose of imposing a special tax on those who are not part of the government program. Now, that, once again, is a dead giveaway as to what's going on here. The provisions having to do with end-of-life counseling, which are so controversial, which have provoked this understandable and, I think, justifiable talk about the idea of death panels or these little synods or cliques of elites who decide who would get what treatment, the idea being that at some point people will simply be cut off because they're no longer considered socially worthwhile or socially useful. These all are described as voluntary in the text of the bill. There would be voluntary end-of-life counseling and voluntary discussion of such things as hospice care and things of that sort. But the point is, there's nothing about this bill that's voluntary, because they would use the IRS as a goad to herd everybody into what we really should start calling a reservation.
I still like the term Kevorkian health plan.
Kevorkian health plan is the best way to talk about it. I mean, back in the 1990s, when it was Hillary Care, with Hillary Clinton, who had no expertise in any of the subjects having to do with health care and the delivery thereof, was putting together her program. One of the things that she talked about was the creation of what they called health care alliances, which were basically these, what we call public-private partnerships now, what Mussolini called cooperatives. Is the old fascist model of bringing together politically connected, nominally private entities with government. That was going to be the delivery system, and Hillary Clinton was talking with the standard list of big government-favored insurers in terms of putting together the mechanism for these cooperatives. Now they're talking about co-ops. But what they're talking about, really, if anybody has a sense of history here, are reservations. They want to herd us all onto healthcare reservations, the way that they herded the Lakota Sioux in the 1800s into these tiny reservations, then used rationing of goods, particularly, of course, foodstuffs, as a way of ensuring political submission and political compliance when these corporate interests wanted to run these taxpayer-subsidized railroads through territory that was promised by sacred treaty to the Lakota Sioux. If the Lakota proved a little bit restive, they'd simply have their rations cut off. Well, that's the same mechanism we're talking about here. They would have the power, literally, to use access to desperately needed health care to manipulate people to do anything that they wanted and to decide which elements of the population, for that matter, are going to be permitted to live. And the way that this would operate, once again, if they completely kill fee-for-service medicine, would do away entirely with the pricing mechanism and the use of market signals, which is how people really know what something is worth. You'd substitute the political calculations of these supposedly omnicompetent, endlessly benevolent people to decide what a procedure is worth, what certain types of long-term care would be worth, and more importantly, and more to the point, what the social worth of a given individual is. And that's when we get into this nasty discussion of what they call quality-adjusted life years, or QALYS, Q-A-L-Y-S. That's something that was being discussed, once again, in 1993 and 1994. Talk about deja vu. They were talking back then about QALYS as the measurement for how to determine if a person was really worth the public investment of funds in the maintenance of that person's health. You know, if you're talking about a 65-year-old with a chronic condition or a degenerative condition, you use the QALY index, the QALY adjusted life year index, to decide whether really he's going to have enough QALY adjusted life years in his future to justify spending on his needs rather than on the needs of a healthy 25-year-old kid. And this is something that has been discussed in literature in the World Health Organization and in various socialized medical systems, or systems of socialized healthcare delivery overseas. And it's all based on lifeboat ethics. You know, who's the first to be tossed overboard when we decide that something has to be done in order to preserve the bulk of the benefits for those that we consider to be worthwhile? You know, the first people tossed overboard are usually the weak, usually the ones who are more dependent. And Dr. Stan, when you talked about the system that existed before, where you had these county hospitals that were operated in such a way that doctors who had a genuinely charitable sense of vocation would go out and donate their services to help the poor, that's the way that this fee-for-service clinic works here in Fruitland, Idaho, and that's the way fee-for-service works in a lot of places in this country. And that will be killed outright if any of these visions of socialized medicine, knee healthcare reform, are enacted. That's what they want to do away with. They want to do away with the idea that there is a doctor-patient relationship that is sacrosanct, that the doctor has an obligation to that patient as an individual, rather than turning the doctor into a political instrument of the will of the political elite.
I think that Newt Gingrich said it best, but he said, and I very seldom agree with Newt Gingrich,
yeah,
but he said, there really are people working in government who believe in euthanasia. Do you really want to turn your health care over to a government where there are people who believe in euthanasia? And I say, Newt, on this, you're absolutely right. Right ahead, William.
Yeah, we have come to a pretty pass when Newt Gingrich is the voice of reason on any issue, but he has that exactly right. The thing that I find interesting here as well, and once again, this is a strain of political discussion that really is of a vintage of 1993, 1994 or so, is this question about the elemental nature of government. The people who were the most energetic and fanatical advocates of some unspecified variety of government health care intervention here are upbraiding those of us who oppose what they're doing for believing that government is not a fountain of the purest benevolence. They talk about the fact, I think that Keith Olbermann, the cable news broadcaster who was an effective voice of opposition during the Bush regime and now has become more or less the court jester for Obama, he's talking about the idea that the people who show up at these so-called town hall meetings are possessed of this paranoid, unreasonable fear and hatred of government, that they believe that government is actually capable of murdering people in order to enforce political conformity. And once again, if you don't know anything about recent history, if what happened at Mount Carmel isn't enough of an indication about the relative benevolence of government, or the needless bombing of the Serbs in 1999, or any of the horrible things that have happened under the last administration that were routinely chronicled and properly castigated and chastised and condemned by the likes of Keith Olbermann, if you don't remember any of these things about what they say regarding the fundamental nature of government, go talk to an Indian sometime. I mean, for heaven's sake, these people have no sense of history at all. If you want to see what government is really like from the receiving end of things, study the history of the American Indian. These are peoples, not a people, they're not homogenous, who were broken to the saddle of state authority and who were disarmed en masse and then herded into reservations where they were basically taken on as wards of the state, and everything was provided to them for the purpose of reducing this once proud and free people to a state of abject dependency. And, of course, they're a dying, dispirited people. And that's pretty much what they're talking about now. And the really ominous element here that was not present during the era of Manifest Destiny, which at least, of course, involved creating something as well as doing all these horrible things I just described, is that we're dealing with a late imperial government right now that is bankrupt in a way that no government has been in human history. Next Tuesday, the FDIC is supposed to put out a report on the health of the American banking system. By next Wednesday, we could be having a bank run in this country of unprecedented magnitude. That's a very realistic possibility because the banking system is completely bankrupt. And you've got a system right now where the only profit that is being made by all of these institutions, whether you're talking about the automobile industry, or whether you're talking about Citi, whether you're talking about Goldman Sachs or AIG, the only profits they're making consist of direct parasitical transfers of wealth from the productive element of the population through government into the hands of these corporate welfare queens and welfare recipients who are taking in huge amounts of money, unfathomably huge amounts of money, and then basically wasting it on their lusts because they're politically privileged. They don't have to do anything to earn their money. AIG is a completely worthless enterprise, and yet they're turning a profit right now because they've got a siphon stuck into the main artery of the American economy. And these are the people, once again, the people who arranged this incredibly corrupt system where you've got this direct plunder going on, undisguised plunder on behalf of the most corrupt people in the financial industry. These are the people who want to run our healthcare system. And it simply beggars the imagination, it beggars description.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Green. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris William is simply pointing out how absurd it is to want to trust government with running the healthcare system. Certainly next week, while we're going to have the report from the FDIC on the health of the banking system, and the banking system here in the United States, which is under the control of the Federal Reserve System, which is responsible for maintaining the stability of our financial system, the banking system is simply bankrupt. Most of our banks are insolvent. Whether they're going to admit that, I don't think they're going to tell the American people the truth,
no.
But the FDIC is insolvent. They've gone from about $55 billion down to $13, and that was as of March. And then they pledged all sorts of tens of billions of dollars to help the banks that are buying up the banks that are going under. So if you look at all the money that they pledged, plus the only fact they're down to $13 billion, the FDIC itself really is not a solvent organization because most of the debts it's pledged to back are simply not valid debts. In other words, they're worth far less than they have pledged to finance. So we are in real trouble. Do you want these people to run your health care system? I think that's the question.
Well, what they're really talking about running, once again, is the health insurance system and the system of compensation that would be in charge of the funding for health care. And that's the real indictment here, is that you've got people who have arranged this world historic financial sinkhole that we're dealing with, who would apply that same genius to running the healthcare financing system of our country.
But they also have things in there, in the healthcare bill, where they will have boards set up by the government to determine what treatments are appropriate and what treatments are not appropriate. There will be boards and committees that decide at what age you would get certain types of treatment without ever seeing who the patient is. You could have a very vital 90-year-old. You could have a very decrepit 70-year-old. But believe me, government will use a formula rather than the individual. They are going to start dehumanizing the people, and those who control the health care system control the lives of the people. And I don't want to trust my life or the life of any other American to the people who couldn't even manage the cash for Clucker's bill.
Exactly. What you're describing here when you talk about the treatment of people here as part of a formula as opposed to individuals who are ministered to directly by a doctor on the basis of his Hippocratic responsibilities, his Hippocratic ethic, is really the veterinary ethic, what's been described as the veterinary ethic. And that is that when you have a third party in charge of determining what will be paid, when a third party controls the purse strings, controls access to funding for health care, then the party receiving health care basically has no say in the matter any more than your pet would have. If you take your pet to the doctor, the pet's not going to be making any decisions about what medical procedures the pet would undergo. If the pet, for instance, if you have an aging cat with renal difficulties, which is a very, very common feline malady when you're talking about a cat of a certain age, if you decide you don't want to pay for a given type of veterinary treatment for an aging cat, then the cat simply dies. That's the veterinary ethic at work. And what we're talking about now is the application of that en masse to the American population, because the people who would constitute these boards, these synods, these cliques, however you want to describe them, that would define the priorities for medical funding, would be the gatekeepers that hold access to the funding for the various programs. And they might as well be treating us as if we were dogs and cats and other domestic animals, because they would be making the decisions. We would not be making the decisions. Our healthcare professionals would not be making the decisions either. They would not be able to practice medicine on the basis of the Hippocratic responsibility to treat the individual as an end in and of himself. They would be, and this is where the Nazi and fascist discussion is so appropriate, they would be operating on exactly the same premises that the Nazi doctors operated on. Go back and read Robert J. Lifton's book, The Nazi Doctors, if you want to see the parallels here. They actually modified the Hippocratic Oath in National Socialist Germany to reflect the idea that a doctor was an agent of the collective. His responsibility was to the collective good of the Volk. It was not to the needs of the individual, which is a complete perversion of medicine going back even before Hippocrates. I mean, Hippocrates simply made, as I understand it, it's been a long time since I studied the question, but it seems to me, I recall, that Hippocrates simply codified what had been understood as the responsibility of a healer in antiquity. And what we're talking about now was is supplanting that with the collectivist vision that has led to mass death.
I agree with you totally. We're in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen. There are people there in positions of power who have a different worldview, and they want to make life and death decisions for the general population. People say, well, suddenly nobody, they're just going to have to do the best they can. No, there really are people who believe there's far too many people in the world. And if you haven't read my Population Control Agenda monograph, my Population Control Agenda monograph, it's up on the Internet. Why, pull it down, go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and understand there really are people who want to eliminate over 90% of the world population. And they're deadly, deadly serious. William, go right ahead.
I do think that the worldview question is the most relevant one here, because if you look upon population as a plague rather than as a reflection of a created order, then you're going to have a very different way of approaching the needs of the weak among us. If you're talking about the unborn, obviously, if you believe that there are too many people, then you're not going to be unduly concerned about the rights of the individual human being who is developing within the womb of his mother, or for that matter, you're not going to be all that concerned about a neonate, somebody who is, say, in that period between birth to 18 months. There's literature out there, and of course, you know this very well, Dr. Stan. Many of your listeners probably do as well. There is literature in both the field of medical ethics and in the field of constitutional law that suggests, or that urges, rather, that we should perceive neonates, people who are below the age of 18 months, as something other than fully formed human beings. And for the purposes of social policy, we could treat them as disposable as the unborn are treated right now. And the same obtains when you're talking about people who are toward the end of life or in what are considered to be persistent vegetative states. And these, of course, would be the people who would be right at the front of the queue of people who would be thrown off the lifeboat if government is in charge of rationing health care. And government is going to be rationing health care. Obama has said so himself, not in such clangorous and disagreeable terms, but he has endorsed the premises that lead to rationing. His preferred euphemism is a difficult democratic discussion or difficult democratic conversation about how to deal with the costs that are accumulated in treating the chronically ill. That, of course, means that you would have the lifeboat exercise being conducted on a society-wide scale. It would be democratic in the sense that we would be permitted to make a lot of noise until the decisions are imposed upon us by our betters who would be running these healthcare Soviets.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, of course, on Friday evening, William Grigg. And certainly before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your website, how they can get to your radio program, how they can get to your blog, how they can get your books. And incidentally, we do carry Liberty and Eclipse of William's latest book, but it's other ways to get it as well. You can get it through his website. And then, of course, if you're out in the listening audience, you have a question, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but you go right ahead, get the information out on your ministry and your work.
Thank you so much. My blog and my radio program are both called Pro Libertate. The blog is found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time is spelled as one compound word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or go to willgrigg.com and then look at the right-hand side of the screen. There's a list of external links. The top link will take you to Pro Libertate, the blog. The radio program is broadcast by the Liberty News Radio Network, which is found at libertynewsradio.com. And I broadcast from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock Mountain Time, which is 4 to 5 o'clock Pacific or 6 to 7 o'clock Central, from Monday to Friday. I've been off a couple of days this week because, as I mentioned, I've been busy with other things, you know, trying to get over a sudden and very disruptive sickness. But most of the time I'll be broadcasting 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock Central, or rather Mountain Time, at libertynewsradio.com. There are a number of terrestrial stations that are part of the Liberty News Radio Network. There are, I think, probably a score of them. And it's an up-and-coming new network. It's a going concern as of earlier this year, a young, brash upstart. And there are dozens of people who contribute programs to this new network. As I've said before, there are some hosts and some programs where opinions are expressed that I disagree with. But you know what? They're all worth listening to. And I've always urged people on my radio program, whenever they find themselves disagreeing with me, to call in and express their disagreement on the assumption that I can learn something from listening to the opinions of other people. And I think that that same principle applies when you're talking about the other hosts that do valuable and very provocative programs for the Liberty News Radio Network. All the programs are archived. So if you go to libertynewsradio.com and look at the shows section, libertynewsradio.com/shows, there's a web-based archive of all the programs of all the hosts. And it's also available to listen to by telephone if you don't have access to the Internet or to a terrestrial station. And as far as getting my book is concerned, at the end of every blog essay that I publish at Pro Libertate, the blog, there's a thumbnail illustration of the cover art from my book, Liberty and Eclipse. Right next to it is a hyperlink that you can click that will go to Amazon.com. For those who are interested in ordering the book, it's about 300 pages long. It was published last year, but it's by no means out of date. In spite of the fact that it deals primarily with the Bush administration rather than the Obama administration, it's pretty clear by now that we're dealing more with continuity rather than a contrast between Bush and Obama, particularly with respect to matters of what are called the Homeland Security affairs. It's really interesting, by the way, Dr. Stan, that just in the last 24 hours or so, we've had something confirmed that most of us knew or at least strongly suspected, and that is the revelation, which is less a revelation than a confirmation from Tom Ridge, who had been the first commissar for Homeland Security, that the Homeland Security alert mechanism under the Bush administration was being used for a cynical political advantage, that he was being pressured to raise the alert level just before the election, the presidential election in 2004. And as Tom Ridge relates, this was something he supposedly resisted because he'd just become sick of what was going on. It renewed his determination to go out and find a job in the private sector, which he did do, incidentally. He ended up working for a Homeland Security contractor. You know, that's about as private as Halliburton would be considered private. But what he doesn't explain is why it was that you had this whole chain, this whole series of oddly timed terrorism alerts and sudden disclosures, and the elevation and then the return to normalcy in the Homeland Security alert mechanism that seemed to oddly corresponded with the political needs of the Bush administration. And during the Republican National Convention 2004, suddenly you had an elevated state of alert, and you had this steady procession, this almost conga line of people speaking at the RNC about 9/11, about terrorism, about Islamofascism, and all this nonsense. But that's the sort of cynical element of the Homeland Security apparatus that we're not really seeing so much of right now under the Obama administration, but the mechanism that was created over the decades leading up to the Bush administration. That's an important point I talk about in the book. That mechanism is very much in place and functioning. They've simply adjusted their targets somewhat. Now we're talking a lot more, we're hearing talk, rather, about the rise, once again, of an internal domestic enemy, the so-called radical right. We're hearing and seeing, once again, all the greatest hits circa 1993, 1994, about the renaissance of the so-called right-wing militia, supposed threat from the right-wing militia, about gun-toting right-wing extremists. You have Jenna Napolitano, who, as the Attorney General in the state of Arizona, helped in the prosecution of what was called the Viper Militia, which was not a militia group nor a terrorist group of any sort. And we're seeing and hearing all these hits being played again. And this, once again, is something I talked about in the book, and we talked about before, Dr. Stan, the way that this immense apparatus that was created supposedly to protect us from these foreign terrorist threats is now being turned to a machine of undisguised internal regimentation and repression. And it's being done, of course, beneath the facade of the sunny, avuncular, endearing Barack Obama, who is a rather personable guy, and he doesn't strike most people at first exposure as a ruthless or particularly ambitious type of a person. But if you take a look at what's going on, we're actually in a much more dangerous position now in terms of our civil liberties than we were under the Bush administration. And Liberty and Eclipse, is, for that reason, it's still relevant. I had intended to do a second edition to try to flesh out more what's going on with the Obama administration, but I'm probably going to have to revisit that in a future book if I'm indeed going to deal with that subject. I probably will, but, of course, that's a function of time. I don't really have a whole lot of time, but between the radio program and the blog and opportunities like this, I do find that we can get the message out, and we can we're having an impact. We're gaining traction with the public, and so it's a dangerous time, but it's also a time of opportunity.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things this last week was a fellow, I believe his name was Hal Turner.
Yeah.
And Hal Turner, of course, was arrested by the FBI because on his radio program he was giving out the address of judges and saying they ought to be killed. He disagreed with some of their decisions, and well, Chris, when he was arrested by the FBI, his lawyer announced that he had been an FBI informant. He was an agent provocateur, employed by the FBI to whip up, of course, extremist sentiment within the conservative community. An active person, just like exactly the members of the Irish Republican Army who were going around killing people. Of course, Hal Turner didn't kill anybody. He was simply telling us, oh, my goodness, we're going to have the Amaro, you know, look here, here's the Amaro. You know, the Amaro is going to take over. They can do away with our currency. We're going to have the Amaro. And then, of course, doing everything he could to inflame the conservatives in this country. And he was an agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Now, supposedly, he's no longer working for them when he made these latest remarks. Who knows what the truth of the matter is? One branch of the FBI didn't know what another branch of the FBI was doing. But I will tell you, if you study what's going on, you find out that so much of what happens is not what it appears to be. For instance, you go back to 1983, bombing of the American embassy in Beirut, bombing of the American the Marine barracks in Beirut, 240 Marines are killed in that. And then we find out the man who did that is a man named Mousavi. And, of course, Mousavi was the prime minister of Iran at that time. Mousavi today was the man who is being backed by our government to run against Ahmadinejad. In other countries, he's known as the butcher of Beirut because he was responsible for the taking captive and then the torturing to death of a CIA operative, a gentleman who operated out of Beirut, but this is never mentioned in America. That's the man we're backing against the wicked Ahmadinejad. We're backing the just Mousavi who really won the election, and I don't believe it for one minute. Nothing as it appears to be. But we have to understand there are people working behind the scenes who have a different agenda, who are using agent provocateurs right here in America. They've infiltrated the conservative movement, the Christian movement, the liberal movement, trying to stir up unrest and confusion and fear and uncertainty.
It's really good that you mentioned the Hal Turner case, because I did a piece about a year and a half ago where I had his picture on my website, and I talked about his background as an FBI agent provocateur and informant. He had been busted by a group of people who had managed to track emails that he had been exchanging with his handler in the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New Jersey. And after I published that, Hal Turner wrote a piece in the comments section of my blog, Pro Libertate. He had written in the feedback section of the piece where he stridently and ardently denied that he was an informant, that he'd ever been working with the FBI, that it was all something that was being said by his detractors by way of completely unjustified defamation of what passed for his character. And of course now he's been called in. They've basically burned their informant, they burned their asset, and now he's complaining about his treatment. And there have been a number of people in recent weeks who've been reeled in. Dennis Mahan, who was involved in the Oklahoma City conspiracy, who's a former Klan leader and a former, quote-unquote, former neo-Nazi.
He lived in that terrorist Christian identity movement town called Elohim City.
Exactly.
And what about, I've always figured he was a government agent, was he?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was. My former associate, William F. Jasper, who did really the definitive work, investigative work on the Oklahoma City bombing conspiracy, received two very foul, profane death threats from Dennis Mahan that Bill recorded and played for me after Bill had exposed him as an agent of the federal government. And the other thing that's really interesting about him is that he was double or triple dipping. He claimed to be receiving payments from the Iraqi government as well. That would be laundered money from the U.S. government, because Iraq, of course, the government of Saddam Hussein, was on the U.S. payroll at the time. But he actually sent, and in the New American we published, a photograph of himself at I can't remember which of the locations in the former East Germany, palling around with people who just graduated from the GRU training academy in Russia, and he was talking just boasting about the fact, as he described it, that he'd received money from the GRU and the FSB or KGB. So he was double or triple dipping. He's really quite a filthy character. And he and his identical twin brother were just recently busted, and they're standing trial now for a terroristic act in the form of mailing an explosive device to a state attorney in Arizona. But it seems as if there are a number of people who have been reeled in recently who have had careers as provocateurs and informants. And in the case of the Viper Militia, that I mentioned, the so-called, they never called themselves a militia. They were packaged as a militia, branded as such by the ATF in 1996. During the trial of the handful of people in that group who were actually convicted of conspiracy charges and weapons charges, they were not convicted of plotting to blow up Federalist buildings, as Keith Olbermann ignorantly claimed this week, and as Mark Patak of the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center dishonestly insinuated this week. They were not convicted of crimes of that sort or terrorism charges of that sort. They were actually convicted on what we consider the almost technical charges having to do with weapons violations and so forth. But in the trial of the Viper team, it came out in sworn testimony from the ATF that the one overt act, and it always takes one overt act in order to make a conspiracy case against anybody, the one overt act here that framed everything they did was a suggestion made that they go out and rob a bank, and that was a suggestion made by an ATF provocateur. And nobody in the Viper team wanted to do that. They did not want to commit crimes. They weren't about to countenance the idea that their group, whatever you think of it, would be involved in criminal activity. And that's the same pattern we've seen time and time again, whether you're talking about these groups of barely literate people who are being described as Islamic terror cells, or whether you're talking about so-called right-wing extremists. Time and time again, they get infiltrated by somebody who's on the payroll of the ATF or of the FBI or of some three-letter agency or some alphabet soup of three-letter agencies, both domestic and foreign, and then the person who is the infiltrator suggests that they go out and they commit some kind of an overt act of crime or overt act of political terrorism, and it's on the basis of that suggestion that every act that is undertaken by members of that group becomes part of a conspiracy that is then prosecuted by the federal government. And all the headlines say is that there's another terrorist group that has been broken, there's another terrorist cell that's been exposed, another terrorist plot that's been foiled, and bit by bit by bit, the federal government expands its powers more and more in terms of its ability to manipulate people and to imprison people at a whim. And bit by bit, the public mind is being molded in such fashion as to believe that we're under siege by these people, with nothing of the sort going on. It really is, in a classic sense, Orwellian, the manufacturing of this sense of all-encompassing threat that is at once insistent and tantalizingly vague. You know, there are all these people out in the hinterland, supposedly, who mean to do us harm. It used to be that we were supposed to focus on the omnipotent troglodyte, Mr. Bin Laden, who probably is long since expired, but we were supposed to believe that sitting in a cave somewhere in Afghanistan, he posed an existential threat to the United States. And now we're being told that the hills and our communities are simply lousy with the so-called right-wing extremists who are seeking to kill and terrorize us. And chances are, as the economy takes a real dive, even a worse dive than it's in right now, and people end up at each other's throats in competition for some of the more elemental things that we need, the domestic angle is going to prove to be a much more profitable way for the government to pursue its strategy than talking about a foreign threat. And those are going to be interesting times. I'm not really looking forward to that. What I'm hoping is that people will remember that if you're part of a political group that's criticizing what the government is doing, somebody you don't know shows up and starts urging you to do violent things that are either borderline or outright criminal, mark that guy down immediately as a Fed. That's folk wisdom from the 1960s. That's ancient wisdom, and it's completely valid. It used to be said that the only way that the KKK or the American Nazi Party stayed alive was it was getting transfusions from the federal government.
Well, don't forget about the Communist Party here.
Exactly.
Don't forget about the Irish terrorist movement over there in Ireland, where the chief torturer, who was actually going around and killing people who were suspected of infiltrating the IRA, he was actually a British agent, who was killing Irishmen to cover his own involvement in it. Go right ahead, William. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, as always, Dr. Stan, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be on your program. I really admire what you do, and I really appreciate the fact that you have a large and wonderful audience of people who really want to do the right thing because it's the right thing. It's a wonderful blessing to know that there are people like that in our country. And I've been blessed over the last several weeks to have received a number of emails and other communications from people who are part of your audience, and they're very wonderful people. And
we're lucky to have them.
I know.
I appreciate
that. You know, amid our trials, both national and personal, it's just a terrific blessing to know that God has not left us without fellowship, and that's an immense blessing. We really need that. As human beings, we're designed that way. We're designed to seek out the companionship of people who share our values and aspirations, especially those of us who are individualist in our outlook. I mean, it's often been said that trying to organize individualists is a little bit like trying to herd cats, and of course that's true. We're strong-willed. We don't really take a yoke willingly. We look upon authority with suspicion. That's an American trait. That goes back to our founding. We don't necessarily discard the idea of authority outright. We just say that we don't trust people who've been given authority, and we want people in authority to be accountable too. And it seems to me that that element of our national personality, our aggregate personality, is really manifesting itself right now, and that's a very healthy and overdue thing. And that's one of the reasons why people are getting their back up over the prospect of the people who arranged the Cash for Clunkers deal and the bailout of AIG and Goldman Sachs would be deciding what health care we can get in the future. I mean, it's amazing that it took something that radical, something that potentially genocidal, to get people riled up. But they are riled up now, and so that's to our advantage. What we need to see now is to what extent the dynamic of the early 1990s is going to play out, to see if there's going to be some arranged catastrophe on the order of the Oklahoma City bombing in order to take the fizz out of this percolating anti-government furor that is building in our population right now. I'm not at all convinced that we're going to be spared that. I really think that that's a very real possibility. Prepare for it. Gird up your loins. Be ready for that type of thing should it happen, in order to make the case that we're not about lawless violence. We just want the government to be ruled by law.
Amen to that. In fact, we have a constitution. It is the basis of law in America, and we've got an awful lot of subversives working right in Washington, D.C., some of them in the White House. William, thanks so much for being with us. We always look forward to Friday, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. God bless, Doctor.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We do hope, of course, you enjoy having William on with it on Friday evening as much as I do. A very insightful individual. Certainly there's nobody that I know who is more eloquent in his speech and certainly more dedicated. He's been at this for a long time, and believe me, I've seen an awful lot of people come in, and then they get burned out and they go out. But William is there, committed as I am to this battle, this spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, because there is a conspiracy against God. Christianity is under attack in America today. The conspirators took God and prayer out of our schools intentionally to destroy the religious foundation of this country because the Masons controlled the United States Supreme Court in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1 from 1941 to 1931. I'm sorry, 1941 to 1971, and nobody is going to tell you that, because after all, we shouldn't speak against the Masons, should we? And yes, we should, because they're a secret society that is dedicated to the worship of a different God, the great architect of the universe. And every Mason looks forward to the time when he will stand before the great white throne of judgment. That's part of their belief. But the great white throne of judgment is the judgment of the damned. Look it up in the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's in the Bible. The great white throne of judgment is the judgment of the damned. And we need to warn Masons to get them out of Masonry and to bring them into a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret and on the Financial Armageddon. They're two separate talks, each one with a syllabus. You need to get the information, and then you need to help us get the information out across America. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com. If you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Many of our people have been with us, supporting us for many years, have lost their jobs. Remember, there are between 25 and 30 million Americans who are either unemployed or underemployed, and some of them were our supporters, and if you're in a position to help, why, we'd love to hear from you. If you believe, as I do, that this is truly a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, financial battlefield, but you must understand it is primarily a spiritual battle. And there really are spiritual forces out there. There is another dimension which some people have tapped into. Some of the wealthiest people in the world, J.P. Morgan was into astrology. Andrew Carnegie was into spiritualism. Henry Ford was into theosophy and spiritualism. And you go down the line of the people of great wealth, and you will find that so many of them have been affiliated with one or another occult organization. The Rothschilds were affiliated with Aleister Crowley's Golden Dawn organization. And the Rockefellers, people like Stephen Rockefeller and Lawrence Rockefeller were involved with the occult. And even, David, there are reports that he went to the meetings there in Colorado where the occultists and the shamans were there. And this is covered in one of Dennis Cuddy's books. The information is there. You need to understand and remember David Rockefeller is the most important man in the world. If you haven't read his memoirs, we have them. We want you to read, especially page 405, where he talks about how these people believe, some people believe, he is part and his family are part of a secret cabal that's working against the best interests of the United States to bring about a new international order. And if that is the charge, I stand guilty. And I'm proud of it. Those are his words. And then he goes on to say, Chris, they never talk about how good things are in other countries. I mean, certainly look how much better off things are in third world countries and better off in the United States, the inference being since we've been in control. Then, of course, if they were in charge then, they're in charge now. Are they willing to take the blame for what's going on? They should, because they brought it about intentionally and maliciously to impoverish the American people and destroy our nation, and transfer our wealth to other nations. Please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.